I'm looking at the guy opposite me in the studio. Man, you're all dressed up. What? This is just radio, dude.
It's always business, Mike.
That is Stephen Penn from Penn Rakowski, fine sponsor of the Mike Novak Show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you in the studio. And that's because, and as I mentioned earlier, part of the way this has all come together with you and me is because you listened to the show. You basically started as a listener.
Correct, yes.
To the show and liked what I had to say and the things I was covering. And so put your money where your mouth is, which is, I always love that. You know, if any other people out there are considering that, please give me a call. You're welcome anytime to advertise. This is environmental capitalism here.
Right. And, well, and you and I have discussed this, and when I started listening to your show, it was strictly gardening, and you were on the second part of another. There was another show I listened to primarily, and continued to listen to you.
You're talking about Mighty House?
Mighty House,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, where we had Self-Help Sunday.
Yeah, that's exactly
the
right.
The late, great Self-Help
right.
Sunday.
They went to Saturdays, and unfortunately, I'm in the office Saturdays, so I don't listen to them anymore, but you're still on. And your show, in my opinion, had evolved from not just gardening, which, you know, is wonderful. It inspired me to start, and I'm all thumbs, but I enjoy getting out there in the, you know, 2 weeks.
All green thumbs.
The 2 weeks of summer that we have, I enjoy doing it. but you got into the environmental issues, and that's right up our alley. And you and I have talked, and I think I told you a few weeks back I was coming from out of town listening, and you had a doctor call in, and the discussion had just, in my opinion, really reached a level of Tom Hartman-esque wonkiness where it really people are engaged, they're involved, they're interested, and these are really important issues. And you're the only one that I know that's bringing these things to the forefront. They've got to be talked about. We're outmanned. It's big business, big money, and people are going to be impacted, affected, and forever. Once, as you said, once the sandbox is created, there ain't no redoing it. You're done.
And that's the point of Penn Rakowski. You guys do dust law. How is it that you decide to wander into that field exclusively?
It was purely by accident. I had done plaintiff side injury work. I've always believed personally in helping the little guy. And it just worked out. I had a medical malpractice type background in law, and a position opened up at a firm that did occupational exposure. And it was an opportunity for me to go from taking the medical interest I had and applying it to products and environmental law, which I also found interesting. So that was 95 and 94, actually. And it's been that way ever since. And I enjoy it very much. It's a great, rewarding area of the law. You're dealing with people that are truly sick and injured, and the ability to help them is very rewarding. I enjoy it. If I couldn't do this, and I've told people, if I couldn't do this, I'm not sure I'd really want to do anything else in the law.
Hmm. That's very interesting. And so that's how I got to know you, is that when we started talking about this, and it was about 2 years ago when I first became aware of the frack sand mine that was going to be constructed outside of the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park. Started talking about this, and you wrote a couple of times and said, hey, you know, that stuff is not good. It's bad juju.
Correct.
And, you know, your listeners should know about that. And so I sat up and paid attention, and I'm glad that we've been able to continue that conversation. So with that, it sounds like a good time to go to the phones and talk to Ashley Williams. Ashley, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning. It's a pleasure to be on with all you guys.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, Ashley is a self-described fractivist and fraxandivist. I like that.
Trying to coin that for myself, yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of interesting, Ashley. I mean, I've been following this issue for a couple of years on this program. I sometimes feel like I don't do enough because I know it's ongoing, but I can't talk about it every week. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. On the other hand, for you guys living out in LaSalle County, it doesn't go away. It's there every day and every week. And it's interesting that over the couple of years, how you've kind of emerged as a spokesperson and sort of a leader in keeping this issue alive. How do you think that happened?
Been since, well, I launched my petition in May of 2013, so pretty much ever since. So I haven't been at it for that long. I don't know. I discovered the Mississippi Sand issue in fall of 2012. That was when they were nearing the end of their permitting process. And, you know, the deeper I delved into that issue, the more horrified I became for LaSalle County and my entire community. And, you know, I was irate, to say the least. And I knew if I didn't act, you know, I don't know. It worried me what the fate was for LaSalle County if someone didn't stand up. I'm the only student I know of in LaSalle County that's fighting this.
That itself is remarkable, okay? I am... cognizant of your age and the fact that you have said, okay, I'm not going to let this stand, and you're young, I'm sure that people in the area are happy to have somebody with that kind of energy involved, because I've seen these issues before and people get tired. They get tired of fighting because they're fighting every day, and they lose, and they get disheartened, and it gets harder and harder. And there you are, putting out petitions and putting together the Facebook page in a relatively short time. You got like 1,500 people on that, and that's probably going to go through the roof. And I encourage people to log on to, if you're on Facebook, you should go to that Facebook page. And tell me the name. I'm looking for it right now. I don't have it right in front of me.
Okay, yeah, I can tell you the name. Okay. It's Protect Starved Rock in the Illinois Valley from Fracking and Mining.
Yeah, and if you just type in Protect Starved Rock, it's going to pop up right away. It is a long name, but it doesn't matter, because if you just type in that first part, Protect Starved Rock, the Facebook page, and I encourage people to like it and get involved in that. And let's at this point bring in the other person who's part of this conversation today, and that is Monty Whipple, who lives in Waltham Township, just north of Utica. Monty, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm good, considering the weather, I'm sure. What's it like out there in LaSalle today?
Well, the worst of it hasn't hit yet. We had a couple inches of snow again overnight. But we're waiting for the real wind and blowing to start. I know out in the open areas it's already started. And when you get these light, fluffy snows, boy, it just blows like crazy. And you get these whiteout conditions, and you get spots on the road where it freezes, and you get dangerous driving conditions. So it's a little of everything. But, you know, it's winter in I guess, LaSalle County.
But, you know, you say that, and it makes me think there's something else that blows around like that.
I was just going to say that. I mean, it makes me think, geez, is the sand going to be blowing around like this? I mean, this looks kind of crazy.
As you know, in the studio, I have Stephen Penn from the law firm Penn Rakowski. You've seen this before, and this kind of blowing sand in Wisconsin, because you cover cases in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Good morning, Monty, by the way. It's nice to have you on the show. Yeah, Mike, you do. And what you will see is the smallest, finest, most respirable sand blowing, and that's the most dangerous stuff out there. We could get into the science of it, but you get into micrometers, which is, if you think of silica, I think the problem people have, let me back up just one, is people think of this as sand. You think of going to a play lot and looking at sand, it's grainy, how can that hurt you? But what we're talking about here, and I'm sure Monty can tell you firsthand, is really very, very tiny respirable particles, microns, and these are spherical silica. And when you deal in the more pure and crystalline the silica is, and the smaller this is, when it becomes airborne, you breathe it in. And because it's so small, it starts embedding its way into your lungs and working its way deeper and deeper. And over time, and you can't expectorate this. So the larger particles, you breathe them in, and we've had this before. You blow your nose, and you'll notice, you know, this whatever, dust particles.
Or Petcoke. You're blowing out Petcoke,
well,
right?
There you go as well. Right, or asbestos or any of these things, right? But it's the finer materials. And that's the stuff that's going to get into the air. And when you get into these open fields, these open quarries, contrary to what I understand is being said by the folks from the mining and their attorneys, just because something might be in a quarry and underneath doesn't mean winds don't whip through there and bring that dust up. And it's this very fine particulate that gets into the lungs and causes injury. And I think Monty's told it quite well. You're going to get the blowing and the drifting, and there's just no way to stop it.
Well, let
me say this.
Yeah.
The mine that we are working on right now out in Waltham Township, I mean, they basically said there's going to be like a 10 or 15 foot berm around it, but the pile of sand itself is going to be way above that. So the berm is certainly not going to stop it. The fact that the bottom of the quarry may be 100 feet underground, you know, there's going to be some blowing from that, but what's going to stop the sand that's on top? Now, they say it's going to be wetted down, but, you know, eventually, I don't care. You know, eventually that'll dry out to the point where you get strong winds like we've been having the last few days. And, you know, and with the prevailing wind around here is normally blowing, you know, out of the southwest or the south. But in the wintertime, it blows the opposite direction. And so it's going to blow right down toward the village of Utica, right down across a couple of restaurants, McDonald's and Subway, and right down, you know, into the area that we're trying to develop for tourism and entice people to come down here. And I can't see that this is any beneficial factor at all for enticing what we would like to develop into a nice community.
I couldn't agree with you more. The wetting down, and I think that's a red herring that is going to be brought up by the quarry proponents. Because the wetting down, you really do want to wet down as you drill. That's an important factor in ventilation and dust control. But the problem is, and I think Monty's right, are these companies going to be wetting down on a regular basis these large piles of sand? I doubt it. Once it's up and in, it's up and in, and you're going to have these large piles of sand. And not only that, Monty, by analogy, you have a quarry 100 feet deep. Well, if you've ever been to a football game at Soldier Field, you know those winds whip in, they come in, they come out.
Yeah.
Wind doesn't mind direction. It'll come in, it'll come out, it'll pick things up.
Right.
It's a problem. I what you're going to see, we've seen before. We have there in Marshfield, Wisconsin, there's a company that makes core doors. So they have hollow doors. They fill the doors for fire code. And back in the day, they used asbestos. We've had clients out of this facility, and there were some epidemiology studies done at this facility. And what they found was people in the neighborhood were coming down with higher rates of disease, of cancer, and fibrosis. And what they found was wind patterns were taking this in the neighborhood, taking this excess of asbestos material out and through the neighborhood. So, in fact, there was some disease caused to the neighborhood by just this facility itself.
So not just the workers that are endangered, but people in the general vicinity as
absolutely
well.
Correct. So, you know, in Monty's situation, what I suspect is coming is, well, we need to do studies. We don't know the wind patterns. We don't know what. But I can tell you this. It's coming. Use your common sense. Monty's absolutely correct. They know where the wind patterns are. They know what's coming. And you don't need 20 years of study to tell you that this is a real potential hazard.
Well, let me say this, because one of our main complaints is we're not talking about just one mine here, because, mm-hmm. in effect, that's what we are talking about with this mine I'm dealing with.
Yeah, this is the latest one, yes.
Yes, but, you know, you talked about the Mississippi mine just east of the entrance to Starved Rock on 71. You've also got a new one that is just being established and built just to the east of Utica itself. You got another one just to the northwest of Utica that's up and in the process of being established. You got the one that we are dealing with now. You've already got existing mines in downtown Utica. You've got existing mines on the west side of Ottawa. We're just surrounded by them. And so, you know, I don't care which way the wind's blowing, it's going to be blowing off some mine in all directions.
That's a good place to tell the story again, and I want to make sure the people understand when Monty talks about Mississippi, he's talking about Mississippi Sand LLC. That's the name of the company. We're not actually at the Mississippi River. We're on the Illinois River, but the name of the company is Mississippi Sand LLC, and that was the company, you know, in a sense, they did us all a big favor by calling attention to this, by putting it in such a high-profile location, which is the entrance to Starved Rock State Park. You know, these guys probably could have gotten away with it for a long time if they hadn't been so brazen, if they hadn't had so much hubris and said, well, we're going to set up right across the street from the state park. And that called attention to this 2 years ago. And so it has continued to call attention to this issue and to the fact that there are so many mines being dug in the county of LaSalle that pretty soon it's hard to imagine what it's going to be like to even live there. As you've mentioned to me, Monty, you're concerned about the tourist business in the area.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not a scientist and don't play one on the radio either, so I leave that to the other gentleman and I guess you have, and Ashley and so on. But, my main concern has always been land use. I'm a farmer. I farm very close to the proximity of the mine or the ground in question here. And, for a long time, the mining territory in LaSalle County bordered on very marginal ground up on a bluff that it wasn't usable for basically anything of any kind except possibly developed into nature trails or something like that. But, we mine coal and rock and all kinds of things in this county. But now they're spreading out into real top-quality farm ground. This ground was rated a 95 out of 100 on quality of ground, quality of land. So obviously it's right at the top of the world's rating as far as growing ag production goes. So that's one issue. The other issue is the Utica, as a tourist town, is a town where people associate with Starved Rock, come down and enjoy the benefits of the beauty of nature and hiking and trails and horseback riding and all that kind of thing. And the way to get to Utica is get off Route 80, go down 178. Well, this sand mine is going to be located just north of that intersection. They've already got a Love's truck stop out there with McDonald's, a Subway, and so on. Perfect spot to start developing that area and take it right down, that development right down into Utica, make a beautiful, attractive area for people to come and enjoy themselves. And you put a sand mine right out there north of that interchange, and that will forevermore take away any further development, any further enhancement of this area in that particular area. I just don't see long-term for our children and our grandchildren that's just got to be absurd. I just couldn't fathom anybody wanting to do that with the potential that this area has for development. And you look at nearby towns, Ottawa and Peru particularly, they've developed that whole area from their town right out to that interchange where now you've got all kinds of shopping and retail stores and restaurants and hotels and you name it, and it's a beautiful area to see, and it's been developed wonderfully. And Utica, for some reason, just keeps fighting that and wants to keep enhancing, mining in their area, which is a total 180-degree opposite from the tourists that they already have. They get 2 million people a year coming to Starved Rock naturally, and they just fight that. And I just don't understand it when they should be working to develop that even further and get 3 million people there or develop some other interests that people would come down to go along with the Starved Rock area. It just boggles my mind.
That is Monty Whipple, who is a Waltham Township resident just north of Utica. Ashley Williams is also on the phone. She's an activist in LaSalle County. In the studio, Stephen Penn. He's not a scientist. He doesn't even play one on the radio. He's just a lawyer, okay?
There are days we even wonder about that, Mike.
With Penn Rakowski, by the way, their website is dustlaw.com. What I understand happened is that this sand mine, Ashley, was proposed. Do you know how long ago that was, either you or Monty?
Well, Monty could better answer that for me.
Let me give you just a little bit of background. The group that bought this is a developmental group out of Oak Brook, Illinois, people who are looking to develop, buy ground and develop it into some profitable enterprise. And when this ground was originally bought from the landowners, it was promised or mentioned that this ground would be developed into light industrial or something that would be advantageous to the city of Utica as a means of providing income whether it be a warehouse for like a major industry, you know, you name it, truck depot, you know, some that would fit along the Route 80 interchange there and Route 6 as well. But in the meantime, or other businesses as well. But in the meantime, the economy went into this recession, and all those things supposedly dried up for them. And so the investors in the meantime are looking for a way to recoup the money that they spent to buy up this ground. And all of a sudden, this frac sand industry took off, and they said, well, if they got sand all around Utica already, then maybe there's sand out in some of our ground. And they did some borings, and lo and behold, there was sand down under the ground 50 feet or so. And they said, well, let's see if we can make a nice profit doing that. So they went back to the village board, and they had to redraw up a new contract with the special use, asking for a special use to change agricultural ground and use it for mining. And that happened just, you know, a year or two ago.
You know, and Monty, let me...
Several years ago.
Let me interrupt you for a second. That's exactly what happened over at Starved Rock, too, is that they had to get a special use permit.
Right. Yeah. But instead, they got it through the county.
Yeah, that was, you know, and that's sort of the insidious thing here that's been happening. 2 years ago, it went through the county, so it was there was lots of noise made, and it was a big deal, and the county had to vote on it. And now these companies have decided, well, that's just too, that's crazy because there's too much publicity surrounding that. So we're going to do an end around the county and just annex to these various cities and do it that way. And that way these city governments can make the decision very quietly, and at least theoretically they do it quietly. But you guys stepped up in this case.
Well, yeah. let me say one more thing. I know Ashley wants to jump in here too. But yes, and in fact, right now, the LaSalle County has a moratorium on further mining because, you know, it's just gone too fast, too quickly here. And they want to get a handle on what all the environmental impacts are before they keep adding more. But in the meantime, this has been in effect for a year or more now, but there's been no new mining applications come before the county because the development companies realize this, and so they go to the cities, and the cities are able to, because of their power over the county and the township, are able to annex the ground into the city, and then the city has sole discretion on what to do with that ground, and in this case, a special use. So the decision rests with the cities, who get all the money. The county gets not a dime out of anything that's mined out of this ground. The township doesn't get a dime out of anything that comes out of this ground. The money all goes to that particular city. And, you know, it gets back to one of my main points, and I think all your listeners need to be aware of this, and I don't know what we can do about this because all the votes are in the cities, obviously. But, you know, whatever happened to the Constitution that we fought a main war over to get our independence that says taxation without representation is wrong? And that's what happened out here. Well, the township of Waltham, the county has no say, so all the powers in the city, we cannot vote for anybody in the city because we're not a member of the city of Utica, but they've got power over the Waltham Township ground, they've got power over the county, and they make the sole decision without anybody having a say-so in what's going on in our own neighborhoods. And something's got to change there, and I don't know how we do it because all the, like I said, all the votes are in the city if you want to change legislation.
And I'll make one more observation, and that is in terms of the jobs, that's always saying, well, we need to bring jobs to the city, and then they talk about numbers like 30. You know, let's trade our farmland forever for 30 jobs, some of which probably won't even go to people in the city. So it's going to be probably fewer than that, as you probably know, Monty and Ashley.
Well, you know, it was interesting because at the last hearing, and I know Ashley was there, one of the speakers that we brought in, you know, kind of made a point out of the fact that the number of jobs brought in is minuscule compared to the long-range loss of income and potential jobs And maybe loss of, I mean, how many dollars would it have to take lost from area businesses because of a little less tourism or, you know, people going through Ottawa and getting to Starved Rock, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's very short-sighted because, you know, that mine out there will be mined for maybe 10, 20 years, 30 years, maybe if they even mine the whole 500 acres they're talking about, and then forevermore until eternity, that ground will be worth nothing, and there'll be not a job, not a dime brought out of it, and it'll be a total wasteland like somebody dropped a bomb on it. If that's the ground would stay in agricultural production forevermore, it would continue to produce agricultural products, produce the jobs that are related to farming, and possibly down the road produce land that would be suitable for development for a hotel, a restaurant, a truck depot or whatever, and that ground forevermore would be usable. So, you know, it's a huge trade-off that they're going for a short-term gain as a pair, opposed to long-term loss of income potential and so on.
All right, let's get to this this hearing that involves the Utica Planning Commission and the Board of Trustees. From what I understand, the Planning Commission would take a vote on it and then the Board of Trustees, but the Board of Trustees really doesn't have to follow what the Planning Commission recommends. They can pretty much do whatever they want. And Ashley, you're having another meeting this Tuesday, right? At the Grizzly Jack's Grand Bear Resort. You guys call it just the Grand Bear Lodge, yes. Right?
Yeah, at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm.
And that's because you started this hearing. When was the first day of this?
Back around the 20th of November, Ashley.
So
sounds about right. Yeah.
So we're going from November. So you guys talked and debated this thing at the first hearing, and then when the end of the evening came, you guys basically said,
"Hey, no, we're not done.
We're not done." I love that woman. Hey, we're not done. So you did it to a second. You went to a second day. Then you went to a third day. Then you went to a fourth day. And now this is the fifth time that you're getting together, and from what I read, the total hours is somewhere around 24.
Yeah, well exceeded 24 now. yeah, we just keep going. The last hearing we actually had invited, who Monty was referring to, is Dr. Ron Kosciuszek, who is Emeritus Professor of Ethics, and he spoke about tourism. And then we had Dr. Kristen Pierce, a professor of environmental public health at the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire, for the hearing to provide expert testimony. And that was the last hearing on the 15th.
Uh-huh. And they both gave testimony. Now, what's interesting, yes, and looking at the testimony, and perhaps Stephen Penn can comment as well, I saw a couple of news accounts that indicate that Dr. Crispin Pierce made a case, but that he got rebutted fairly well. What's your feeling on that, Ashley?
I don't particularly agree. I think Crispin held his ground and did a good job. I think what he was trying to grumble over is that the WDNR is kind of dismissing his findings. He shares all his findings with the DNR, so he was trying to get him on that. And then also he was asking, the village board to seriously think about getting some EPA issue monitors. But, you know, Adrione was saying that the attorney for Aramoni was saying, well, you don't use EPA issued PM monitors, Dr. Pierce. So why are you asking us? But no, I think he did a really great job. I think Dr. Ron did as well. He wasn't able to talk about the Powers report, which he has contributed to, being that Tom Powers wasn't there. But I think he held his ground and did a great job, actually.
And let's clarify a couple of things. Aramoni LLC is the company, Oak Brook Company, investment company that wants to have this built. It would be called Ansell Sands. Is that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a subsidiary of Woodland Path,
right?
The Oak Brook investment firm.
And I'm
Aramoni's the petitioner.
Okay, and I'm wondering.
I would agree with Ashley. I thought Dr. Pierce did a wonderful job holding his own against the cross-examination by the opposing attorney, and he mentioned a lot of the things that Stephen mentioned earlier in the show, and very much correlate what Stephen said.
Well, I'll just jump in here real quick. I read bits and pieces of the reported cross-examination. In terms of the suggestion by the attorneys for the quarry to suggest that the making of a berm or putting this deeper into the ground may make it somewhat, you may have less level of respirable crystalline silica. That's true. Absolutely. That doesn't make it safe. And I think that gets to the doctor's point on the EPA and using their equipment. Well, here's the thing. The EPA is their equipment is what's used and is accepted. There's some Supreme Court law on it. That's what's used and accepted as providing the proper numbers for exposure levels. So you would want that. Now, why the doctor doesn't use it, he may not need to use it. He's not under the umbrella of federal authority to do anything. His suggestion is this, at least, if you use the EPA equipment, you're going to be in compliance with certain laws which will give you the numbers which you're going to need, these respirable silica numbers, how much silica sand is in the air. I think it's important to suggest this too, Mike, and perhaps the doctor said it. When the defense comes on Tuesday and suggests these numbers, these levels of silica dust in the air are low, they're going to talk in terms of microns and permissible levels. But I'll tell you this, the scientists all agree on one thing. We're not talking about safe levels. We're talking about levels at which the incidence of illness is comparable to what you might see in the general population. We have this issue all the time in the asbestos context, but the dust itself is really irrelevant. It's not a safe level. There is no safe level of breathing pure crystalline silica at under 10 microns. And so what we're doing here is creating an issue to suggest it's quote unquote safe. All we're saying is that if you're under this level, this permissible exposure level, we don't see a level of an incidence of disease and illness over and above, but you're still going to see it. And, tell the person that gets sick from something that, they were safe when they were exposed to X level.
We have no state standard for silicon ambient air here in Illinois, so that's kind of what he's referencing. Also, I wanted to bring up that Utica has been classified as a cancer cluster already.
And that's, I was going to get to that, but you might as well bring it up. I understand somebody very famous is coming to town.
Yes, we actually got word in Miami News 2 on Friday that the California law firm for which Aaron Brockovich works with is now going to be coming out to Utica to collect medical information from certain Utica residents for which they claim were derived from dust and, sickness had ensued from this water pollution. And we're not sure exactly when, but I think that the Protect Starved Rock site actually launched this dialogue. I think maybe these people maybe thought they were alone at first, but once they actually started, seeing these stories circulating, one of my subscribers said her mother was diagnosed with stage 4 leukemia and father with meningitis and knows 23 people in a 2-block radius of her mother's home who died from or are currently fighting cancer. So this is a big, big issue.
Sorry.
No, so, Ashley, you may be, I don't know about local communities and their levels of what in the air. I would say this, though. There are certain state levels. And, leukemia, various diseases, you're going to start to see. It'll be interesting when they do this medical monitoring, that's what they call it, to see the incidence of disease. And it isn't just necessarily lung disease. It could be, you see people.
Well, that was going to be my question. I mean, if this is a cancer cluster, it might not be related to silica.
What silica exposure to silica can cause are myriad illnesses from autoimmune disease. You see incidents of autoimmune disease, cancers. Crystalline silica has been called by the World Health Organization a Class 1 carcinogen. You don't get more deadly than that. This is a very serious thing, and it can cause things other than lung disease. Like I say, autoimmune diseases, various things that you're going to need to look at. So they're going to cast a rather wide net, I would suspect, in this medical monitoring to see if there's higher levels of various diseases, not just lung disease.
See, what we're saying is that the high levels of radium and radon and other contaminants that are not exactly tied into these mines. This is what, you know, is to be determined. But the point that we are trying to make is, how could the village be so senseless to welcome further possible contamination from this proposed mine? So that is, you know, that is an important point to make.
Okay, and so I want to get us back to this meeting. So we have this meeting coming up, and there's a good chance you guys are going to finally wrap it up and finish, in that there will be maybe not a vote this Tuesday, but soon there will be a vote. But the weird thing that's thrown into the mix is the idea of annexation. And the possibility that, from what I understand, the company is making noises that, well, if Utica doesn't let us do this, we'll de-annex from them and we'll annex to another town that will let us do it. What do you know about that, Monty?
Well, that's really almost the crux of the problem. I really think the trustees in Utica, you know, agree that this probably isn't the best thing for the town, and would like to say no. But they worry about the possibility that there is a stipulation in the contract that if Utica doesn't fulfill their covenants, that they could de-annex out of Utica and go to a neighboring town such as LaSalle and try to run this proposal through them. Now, we've spent a lot of money as concerned citizens hiring lawyers, getting different opinions from the law firms, and they're just about unanimous in agreement that, no, this will not pertain to our case because Utica has fulfilled their covenants. They've done what they've been asked to do, and you just there's an appellate court ruling that sustains what we're saying. You just aren't going to be able to de-annex out of a city once you've signed a contract that you agreed to annex into it. So we feel comfortable with that. What we're worried about is the village attorney itself stating, well, you know, you take it to another court, another judge may say something different, but our judges are basically saying, you know, once, you know, an appellate court makes a ruling, most times nobody else is going to, you know, counter that. So we feel, you know, 90% sure that this is, you know, the law is on our side. We have to get by that other 10% that, you know, people may be worried about. Well, geez, if there's a small chance, I hate to say no.
Well, Monty, I happen to have a lawyer in the studio here.
Yes, I would like another opinion. Well, we can take all the good opinions we can get.
Yeah.
Well, I looked at that, Monty, and my initial reaction was, wow, this may be the hook you get them on that just puts everything to bed. I haven't looked at everything in detail, but from everything I've read, it's a very intriguing argument. It's got legs. It's got legal support. And boy, if you win the day there, you've gotten what you wanted on something totally unrelated to everything we've been talking about here today. I think it looks like a winning argument. And again, you're right. There's always that 10% chance. There's always the chance you get a judge that does something. But there's precedent there. You should feel good about it. I was excited to read that.
So anyway, to wrap this up, I would like people to know, people in the area, and anybody not in the area wants to be part of this. It's been going on long enough. The fifth night of testimony this Tuesday, January 28th, 6 p.m. at Grizzly Jack's Grand Bear Resort. That's 2643 North Illinois Route 178 in Utica. That information is on my website. I want you to also go to Protect Starved Rock and the Illinois Valley from Fracking and Mining. Give them some likes because that's the Facebook page that Ashley has set up. I also want to let folks know that this afternoon, we've talked about this movie on my show before, The Price of Sand, Jim Tittle's film, documentary film, is being shown by the Southeast Environmental Task Force at their office, 13300 Baltimore in Chicago. That's at 1:30. It's really, really a good movie. And it shows some of what you guys have been dealing with already, which is how these companies pit the citizens one against another in these areas. For instance, Monty, you were, from what I understand, you were not offered a buyout of any kind, and you're going to end up sitting a kitty corner from this mine, and yet other people sold to this company, and they were deceived because they thought there was going to be some light industrial stuff there, and now they're finding out that it's a frac sand mine. So there's a lot of intrigue and some amount of deception.
That's a very good point, and my wife brought it up initially, that this type of thing tears communities apart, because you got those who are in support of something because it's going to bring some short-term dollars into a community or into a town. You got those who are dead set against us, and it pits one neighbor against another. In fact, we even had it at our church and at our school, where you got some say, well, you know, it's going to bring in some jobs, and we really need jobs. And but, you know, one of the things that Ron Koscheck mentioned, that, you know, Ashley alluded to earlier, the second speaker we had, he mentioned very distinctly, and this is comes out of Dr. Power's presentation, mining towns are not lucrative. You look at mining towns, eventually they become ghost towns. They are strictly blue collar. You think of Appalachia, or the real poor areas, when you associate a town with a mining town, because nobody wants to live there. Nobody wants to, you know, associate or go there for a restaurant or anything like that, because all of a sudden it's in your mind that, oh my God, the air is filled with dust and truck traffic and all this and that. So the short-term gain you get from a few dollars coming in from sand mining nowhere near covers the long-term effects of lost business, lost revenue, lost tourism, and so on. And so we got to get that point across. You know, and I think they do somewhat understand that, but, you know, it's a battle.
Yeah. And Ashley, I'm going to let people also know that you've got a petition, and I've got a link to on my website, Governor Quinn, Stop the Mississippi Sand Frack mine near Starved Rock. It has 17,000 signatures already, and I think people should sign on to that, because I'm using the word environmental in air quotes here. Our environmental governor has not said word one about this issue, and he's got an election coming up. But if he wants to be perceived as a good guy, this might be a place to start. Anything else you want to add, Ashley?
Well, I greatly appreciate the Mike Nowak bump again. I just wanted to tell everyone that this Mississippi sand issue is an ongoing process. They're fully permitted, yet they have not started mining. What I'm currently doing is seeking information about whether or not the state of Illinois will be purchasing land to the buffer zone between that proposed site, their ornate site, and the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park, because it's smack dab along what's referred to as the scenic route to Starved Rock State Park, or Route 71, as you guys know. So I'm seeking out the information. I'm also asking for my petition that for installation of PM air monitors in close proximity to every single sand mining operation in LaSalle County, paid by the companies, but monitored by EPA.
You have to put that on the company. I don't know how you put that on the citizens. They're the ones that are befouling the air. Thank you, Ashley Williams, for your continued work. Keep me posted on this and what happens on Tuesday, all right?
I will.
And Monty,
I will.
And Monty, good luck to you as well, and I hope to hear from you both soon.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you so much, Mike. It was a pleasure.
All right. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Stephen Penn still in the studio with Penn Rakowski. Their website is dustlaw.com. If you ever need somebody to help you with an issue like silica dust or asbestos or pet coke. One of the things that got posted on my Facebook page the other day was this article that Al Jazeera did. I hadn't seen it anyplace else, so, you know, congratulations to Al Jazeera. About the, and I mentioned it earlier in the show, how let's find this here. The Illinois Pollution Board rules against new limits on pet coke, and basically saying that, well, it's not an emergency issue. And that got me to thinking about pet coke itself. Some people say, well, it's not toxic at all. But I would think you would beg to differ as the dust law guy, wouldn't you, Stephen?
Well, I would. And, Mike, if I could just go back and give you a quick – I had one last thing to say on a silica issue. In doing the homework, I went to the Centers for Disease Control website, and an arm of that is NIOSH, National Institutes of Occupational Safety and Health. And this is right from them. I'll get you the link. But NIOSH says this, and I think it's very telling about the dust you're talking about. NIOSH's recommended exposure limit, REL, for respirable crystalline silica is 50 micrograms per cubic meter for up to 10 hours a day for a 40-hour work week. This REL is intended to prevent silicosis. However, evidence indicates that crystalline silica is a potential occupational carcinogen, and NIOSH is in the process of reviewing the data on carcinogenicity. that's what I was trying to drive home earlier. You could set levels, but again, when you're talking about a carcinogen, there just aren't safe levels.
Well, you said earlier, no safe level of breathing pure silica. There is no safe level of breathing pure silica dust under 10 microns.
Right, right, correct.
And I'm looking at this story about the pet coke, and they say that pet coke can contain particles that are smaller than 2.5 microns.
Correct, correct. And in looking, as you sent me this homework in the middle of the night, I was up early looking.
Sorry
at this.
About that.
That's not a problem. If I can give you the good news, in my opinion, is I don't think the Illinois Pollution Control Board said, too bad, so sad. I think what the Illinois Pollution Control Board said was, right size, wrong shape. There was a 50-page opinion written by the board, and it's posted on their website. I didn't have time to read the entire thing. But
well, why not?
Well, you know, I can't. You
sorry
can't text
that.
And drive, but you can read and drive.
Yes.
But what they did say is, what they said was, while this isn't an emergency under the statutory definition, the board does think that rules governing pet coke industry could be improved, and they think it's best to do this via regular lawmaking channels. And they suggest to the board, to the Illinois EPA, to come back and resubmit this under non-emergency rules. And I think all they're saying is this. Look, in what we do, if you bring something before a court on an emergency basis, it heightens everything. You're asking everybody to drop everything, and it heightens the level of what you're asking for. And on the backside, you better have the proofs. And I think all the Illinois, all this pollution board was saying was, we don't disagree that there are problems here. We just think it can be cleaned up.
And the problem is, the longer you wait, the more people are exposed. And
sure.
And some people in the industry say, we haven't had an incident since August. Folks, you know, for one thing, it's the stuff's been frozen for 2 months. It's been covered
and
by snow.
And yet still blowing around in the snow. I mean, Tom Shepard has posted pictures of snow covered.
It's just silly, silly arguments that don't make sense. And you're right. But the normal process takes so long, it seems to me somebody's got to step up and say, well, until we can get this done, here's what we need.
Right. And I think it's not a bad idea to put it out there as an emergency. And even though you fail, you've got the ball rolling. You've got everybody's attention now. So now you can push this thing through.
Well, Stephen Penn, thank you so much from Penn Rakowski, great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show, and I appreciate your commentary on this. You know, I just decided I have to get on the show. Erin Brockovich, if she's going to come to the area.
How cool would that be, huh? You know, I did want to say, you asked me at a break, I did post some water-related issues to all of this as well.
Great.
On the Facebook page. You know, silicosis is one thing. It's in the air, it's in the water, it's everywhere. And it's no way that we can isolate this, and so we really have to be looking at it hard.
All right. Yeah, that's about it. Hey, you get to join us this time, Stephen. Go green or
go home.
Wow.